This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 284, where CJ and I are going to cover a little bit of news. And I sat down and had a talk with Jason Himmelstein about Power BI and Application Insights. Recorded live December the 21st, 2018.
Struggling to reproduce problems in your code base? Successful software starts with Raygun. Raygun provides application performance monitoring, unlike anything that you've experienced before, offering greater clarity around how your software is performing for your customers than any other APM provider. Easily detect and diagnose issues impacting end users and monitor every part of your stack in one place. It's time to get back to building great software instead of fighting it. Start your journey to better software quality and try Raygun for free at raygun.com today.
Hey CJ, how's it going?
Ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, man, it's Christmas.
It is.
I hope you were talking about that and you weren't like, you know, calling me something else.
No. Yes. Gearing up for Christmas. Yeah, we've got a little couple of excited kids off school now as well. So midwinter break for us over here. How about you?
My kids are done at the end of the day today and they're off for 2 weeks. But yeah, we're getting ready for Christmas and just kind of finished teaching a class this week. So I'm looking forward to, I usually don't, working for yourself, you rarely take a full vacation, especially when you're home. And after teaching a full class this week and delivering a bunch of stuff for a client, I was like, you know what? I think next week I'm just going to mail it in and just get some stuff done around the house. So
I've been installing light switches and we've been chatting actually just before the show about home automation stuff. And I think we should do another deep dive on home automation. Like we did an episode a long time ago before you'd really even started doing any home automation. Well, a little bit, right? I think you just started getting into it and we should do another show on this and go deep on where we're at.
Yeah, you've done some cool stuff. You're doing a cool lighting project at your house. We're looking into you're looking into a different kind of a host for a lot of your stuff. I'm hopefully by the time this show comes out, it'll be done, of replacing my home security system with a more do-it-yourself kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which goes into the whole home automation. But yeah, we should definitely have another geek out. We do this in the future. Once both of our projects are done and we're happy with what we did, I'm still in the part where I've got a bunch of parts and wires lying next to me on my desk.
That'd be cool. Yeah, let's do it.
Awesome. Hey, we got some stuff that we want to cover this week. We got just a little bit of news. We've got some really fun picks from both you and I, but also from some listeners who submitted some stuff. And I also sat down and had an interview or had a chat with Jason Himmelstein a couple weeks ago at the SP Fest conference in Chicago, where we talked about Azure App Insights and Power BI. And so we thought we'd kind of do a big mix of everything, a fun show today. Before we do that, though, I got to ask you, we didn't talk about this beforehand, but there's been some funny stuff kind of going on in the last, we've seen on like the social media stuff over the last few days. Both of them are Tesla related. Or kind of Tesla related. I don't know if you've seen this, but there's a video that's out. Have you seen the video that I shared on Facebook about someone took the most recent SpaceX booster didn't land on land that it's supposed to, but it fell in the water and someone like took Elon and took video footage from that and footage from the movie Interstellar and put it together?
Yeah, I did. I watched that yesterday. That was really hilarious. Some people are really smart. Like, I don't know. They've got a lot of time and or a lot of motivation. One of the two.
I love it. Just some great quotes where he's like, oh, this is really bad. He goes, oh, not so bad.
Yeah, I like it. It's quite clever, quite nicely done.
There was that. And I got to tell you, this is actually more fun than I thought it was going to be. But my car can fart now.
I've heard. You've got like some sort of app or something that like directs fart noises at different people or something. Is that how it works?
You can the latest update that we got in our car was I can put a whoopee cushion on any one of the four seats in the car and I can pick the fart noise that I want. And then on demand, I can tap it and it would make the sound. Or you can turn a toggle on and say, whenever you hit the turn signal, it'll fart as well. Which that was fun to do that to my wife. She wasn't too thrilled about that. It was a cool update. But man, there are some funny fart noises. They've got the Falcon Heavy fart. They've got the boring fart.
Nice.
My favorite though is Elon's jab to the company short sellers. It's the short shorts fart.
Short. I like it how he sticks it to the short sellers. Sometimes that's good.
Yeah. So
nice. Well, anyway. I'm glad they're keeping their sense of humor and adding these sorts of things to your car.
Absolutely. It's fun. You see those every once in a while. They do that stuff. But at any rate.
So when they arrive, do they go away? Do the apps disappear after a period of time?
No. So when they do it, they do an update and it's kind of, you get a screen when it's all done. When the next time you get in the car, the screen shows, you know, the release notes on here's the new stuff or the stuff that's changed and all of it's there. So it's, you kind of have to go, it's the equivalent of on Windows or on a Mac where you bring up like the dialogue that has information about your laptop. So like the Windows one and say you have this much RAM and this much disk or CPU and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's like that, the T logo, the Tesla logo on the screen, you hit it and it shows your car with like the VIN number and the software version that you're running. There's like a little gripper that you can kind of slide up and then all the Easter eggs are in there.
I see.
Oh, and I also got Pole Position. The game, remember the old Atari game Pole Position?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're in park, you can hit that. And if you, it's kind of a little backwards, you have to press the brake to go.
Huh.
And you release the brake to brake and you use the steering wheel to steer the car.
That's pretty cool. Like when you're in a car, like when you're in a you know, supermarket or grocery store or whatever, you know, waiting for your family to come out, you can do some Pole Position.
Yeah, it's fun.
Does it come up on the dash or on the center console?
Comes on the center console.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Nice. So yeah, probably it's best you are pushing the brake just in case.
Yeah. Well, you have to have, you know, only these Easter eggs, almost all of them only show up when you're in, when the car's in park.
Probably fair enough.
Yeah. Except for the farting. Yeah. We can do that. I can do rolling farts.
Nice. Thank goodness.
A 99.9% SLA means you're protected from power outages, bad patches, natural disasters, maybe even a dinosaur attack. Does it protect you from yourself though? AvePoint Backup for SharePoint Online provides full fidelity backup and recovery from individual items to entire team sites. AvePoint can run backups up to 4 times a day to ensure your data is secure. Recover anytime you want without having to pick up the phone and schedule restore windows. Learn why AvePoint is the Microsoft Cloud expert at www.avpoint.com.
How about some news?
Let's do it.
Hey, I've got one. You've got one. My news is one I'm really excited about. And one day you and I are actually going to do it instead of just keep talking about it and planning it. And we are both at fault with this. This was actually one of my goals at the beginning of this year for 2018. And I know it's just not going to happen. So we plan on re-platforming the podcast website. I plan on doing it as well to my blog and getting off of the CMS that we use for everything right now and going over to a static site. And we saw an announcement from, I think it was either the Build conference or another one of the Microsoft conferences over the summer, that they announced that they were going to be adding a similar feature that what AWS has had for a while, which is the ability to do static websites on Azure Storage.
Yeah.
And basically this is like, you build out the site, it's all a static site, there's no server-side rendering or anything, and you just copy it over to a blob store and ta-da, the site shows up, custom domain, it's nice and clean. You can put it behind a CDN, blazing fast. I've got a friend that did this with the Azure Storage stuff and watching how the speed of his site is just, it's amazing.
Yeah, static sites, blast. So
we plan on doing this with the podcast. I plan on doing it on my site. What's the news? It went GA for Azure. Nice. Azure Storage static websites went GA last week.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, this would be super helpful. Like not having to use a CMS just because, you know, for whatever reason, small, like either small blogs or whatever, pretty cool stuff. If you just want to throw a few pages up.
Yeah,
really nice.
I'm looking forward to putting our podcast. So we've been having, I don't know if anybody's noticed, but our podcast, our feed has gotten so big that podcast apps like iTunes, they won't show a feed if a feed is greater than 1 meg. They won't update it. And so we've had to go back when we publish new episodes. Sometimes we've had to go back and unpublish old ones. And we've now got a significant number, like almost, I think over 200 of our shows are unpublished now just so we can publish the most recent ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just a pain. And it's the way our CMS works. What's on the site and what's shared via RSS are one and the same. So it's will be nice to have the control to change that.
Yeah. That'll be really good. Speaking of other good news, Microsoft Teams, they have a user voice section or a site. And there's a topic that somebody's added that says, I want to use multiple Teams accounts at the same time. And for anybody who's used Teams knows how painful it is to switch accounts and do all that sort of stuff. This has 6,120 votes. And just yesterday, I think it was, couple of days ago now, actually, I got a notification because I'd voted for this item because it drives me absolutely nuts that it's not a thing, that they have started working on it. And they are doing a couple of beta tests with a few users who have multiple teams. They're calling it multi-tenant feature, right? So that you can switch accounts and stuff. So they've taken the feedback by the looks of it. And it looks like it's coming soon, which will be music to many people's ears.
This is interesting. I'd be curious to, I'm going to go through and vote for this too, just so I get an update on it. But man, it's painful right now. I've switched over to using Teams for a lot of stuff that I was using Slack for. And I understand why people like Teams, but man, it's just, I don't see how people can say it's better than Slack. I mean, the experience is just so much cleaner in Slack to me.
Oh, I totally agree.
But I mean, it's, I know to each their own, and it would be nice to be able to have that capability. So,
yeah, this idea was shared on January 17th, 2017. 2 years later, basically, they're getting onto it.
Be curious to see how they implement this too. It is because that's not, I mean, multi-tenant, having the same credential going between multiple tenants, how can one like custom thing not get access to another one, or how can it get hacked? I mean, that's kind of scary.
They're going to implement it, and whether it's going to be easy to switch between them without logging in multiple times and all that, like, curious. Yeah. I mean, it deals with multiple tenants, right? In terms of if you're signed in with one identity, right? So your primary identity, and you're invited to multiple teams in different companies, you could get access to those. You could switch between those, no problem, currently. It's when you've got multiple identities that's the real problem. When you've got to sign in with different accounts, that's the pain right now.
It's like 10 seconds to switch between the two, and you have to go. You know, the thing that I hate about it, it's not so much you have to take, it takes 10 seconds to switch between two different tenants. The thing that I hate is that you have to go to a tenant to see what stuff is there and unread. Whereas with Slack, it's incredibly easy to see that across, well, we call them teams in Slack, across Slack teams. And it's so easy to jump between them. But
yeah, you're not really signed out of teams in Slack. Whereas Teams, Microsoft Teams, the way they switch you is kind of like signing you out of one and signing you into another. Whereas in Slack, you're always signed in. It's always up and running, and you can see notifications across different teams and stuff like that. Anyway, so yeah, that's coming soon by the sounds of it. Well, hopefully, it should be very nice. We'll keep an eye out for that.
Cool.
Inbox Zero is a thing of the past. We're also inundated with email, and that's where Samebox comes in. Think of it as an EMT for your email. As messages flow in, Samebox does the triage for you. Sane later sifts through all the distracting stuff out of your inbox so that you can focus only on the important emails. And that's just a taste. It also has nifty features like the Sane Black Hole and Sane Reminders. And best of all, you can use Samebox with any email client or phone anywhere you check your email. See how Samebox can magically remove distractions from your inbox with a free 2-week trial. Visit samebox.com/MSCloudShow today to start your free trial and get a $25 credit.
Are you being asked repeatedly to integrate different business systems in ever narrower timeframes with increasing process complexity? What if you could standardize the way you build these business processes so your team are focused on higher value tasks versus the nuts and bolts of running the processes and integrations? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back. Got a custom system you want to connect with? No code extensions let you plug into systems simply and easily using REST and Swagger. With Nintex, work just flows, so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. Try it out for free for 30 days at www.nintex.com/trynwc. So a couple weeks ago, I sat down with Jason Himmelstein at the SP Fest conference in Chicago, and we've been wanting to get together and chat about this stuff. He does a podcast called Bifocal with John White. I was going to say Jason White. Jason Himmelstein and John White run. And it's mostly around business intelligence and specifically Power BI. It's a great show. The three of us have kind of been talking in the back channel about, you know, different ways of how, of different things that we've been doing. And I've shared with them how I use App Insights to do a lot of like telemetry and usage tracking of in my business. And how I've wanted to use Power BI to be able to kind of slice and dice stuff, but I'm like a Power BI. It's like I have two thumbs. It's always hard for me to mess with this stuff. So we sat down and we just chatted a bit on how I use Power BI and, how I use App Insights and then how I could use Power BI, and just thought it was a really good discussion that we thought that other people would be interested in. So we decided to sit down and do it. And he took the interview and he's going to publish it in his podcast as well. But we wanted to throw it in there. We you and I have thrown around the idea of doing an episode in where we just do a dive deep on App Insights, which we should definitely do, but I didn't want to try and sandwich that in with this interview because I thought that we'd be cutting up too much time. So we'll definitely do that in the next few weeks. So why don't we go ahead and run the episode?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this, actually. I haven't heard the interview yet or the recording with Jason. I don't know enough about Power BI to really know what I'm doing. And so, and App Insights, and or App Insights, I should say. And so, I'm looking forward to this. Looking forward to hearing what you guys talked about.
You know, it's smart. It's actually good timing for you because the App Insights guys are getting ready. It looks like January is when they're going to release the version two of the their web-based library. Right now, it's not terribly friendly. It works fine, but the new one's going to be much, much better. So they're rolling that out in January. And then on the other side too, before we show the interview here, there was something that I wanted to call out. When I was at the conference, I've always wanted, Jason and John do this workshop at different conferences. It's a full-day workshop and it's all on Power BI. And I've always wanted to sit in there and do it, and attend it. But it's always at the same time my workshop is. So I've never been able to do it because of a conflict. And I've always thought that what would be helpful is not to go read about Power BI and how, you know, they kind of dive in and say, look at all the stuff that you can do. And it's like, I get what you can do. I understand that. I don't understand how to do it. And I don't understand what the process is. And so Jason did a session at SP Fest in Chicago where I think it was like 3 slides. And then he just started doing stuff. And he kind of showed you where we was going and pulled a Julia Childs and said, you know, here, the turkey's done after 5 minutes. But he walked through getting the data and how he was able to massage it and parse it and how he was able to use it inside of, you know, charts and create a workbook and publish it to the Power BI service and then add that to a dashboard. I just sat there watching him. I'm like going, this is what, for at least for me, this is what I needed. Now I have an idea of how you do this stuff. And that I thought was the biggest thing of let's just see how it's done and not so much the, you know, getting the playbook of, all right, you got to go do all these things. Like I need to see somebody do it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. So no, I'm looking forward to the interview and hearing what you guys chatted about. I'm going to learn a lot.
Cool. Well, let's go ahead and run the interview and we'll come back with some picks. This is Andrew. I am sitting here at the SharePoint Fest Chicago conference here in Chicago, Illinois. And I'm sitting here without my trusty co-host because we are not in the same place right now. So instead, I have a good friend, Jason Himmelstein, with me. How are you doing, Jason?
I am doing great. AC, how's life so far this week?
I'm tired. I'm really tired. Thursday of the conference, Thursday afternoon. Did you have a session today?
I did. Just finished. Came off stage and you were all ready to go with all the mics and everything and felt inadequate because when I did my podcast yesterday, everybody sat around and had to wait for me to get everything out. And you're all professional with like mixing boards and lights and microphones and all. So, yeah.
Well, it's I can't claim credit for all of this. I can only claim credit for some of this because I definitely didn't have the mixing board is definitely not something that I brought in, but something that they set up. But yeah, we're good. We're definitely good. I had a couple of sessions this week, a couple of workshops. Actually, I had something every single day this week, which is what's wearing me down. But got another one that is in about an hour from now. So we thought we'd sit down, carve out about 30 minutes to chat about a couple different things. Something that I know you guys are interested in. You co-host a podcast.
I do. The Bifocal Show. We're going to use I believe we're going to cross-post this episode.
Absolutely.
As a part of that. And John and I will talkie-talkie it beforehand. So this is an opportunity for us to sort of talk on each other's shows for a change. BI, we're all about the business intelligence. And so my session I just finished, I spent the morning down off Wacker Drive at one of our Rackspace offices. We acquired a company called Capital Edge, who's here in Chicago. And I got to go in and spend some time there. Came over and did my BI session on hybrid business intelligence. But I noticed that you were doing a session that has something to do with App Insights, which is all about business intelligence.
Yep.
So I cornered you and was like, hey, we need to talk about this because you know, you came to my session yesterday, which was all about, you know, getting started with Power BI and Power BI Desktop and fun stuff like that. But I want to hear about what you're doing with App Insights on the developer side, because you know, last year we had Paul Schaeflein around the same time where he came out and Paul asked us a bunch of fun questions as a developer for Power BI, but haven't had an opportunity to have as many developers come and talk on the show about what you guys are able to do with the insights that you're seeing, especially in the Azure space.
Yeah. So I have a session. The session today actually touches a little bit on App Insights. It's all about being high performance stuff if you're a developer for client-side dev, applies directly to SharePoint framework. And then at the end, I talk a little bit about App Insights, but I have a session tomorrow that is really all about App Insights and the way that I use it and how I take advantage of it. It's one of those services that when you look at what Microsoft has to offer, you wonder like who was really thinking, because it's incredible what you get for free. Mm-hmm. There's a way that you do it. There is a cost model associated with it, but it's hard to actually hit that cost model. I mean, it's pretty damn powerful what you get for free. There's a couple different ways you can use it. I mean, I'll talk a little bit about how I use it, and I'm going to go into more about that in my session. For those of you who are listening on this, we've got about a couple hundred people that are here listening to the show here with us, which is a gross over-exaggeration of about, yeah. You can hear the four people laughing at us.
Well, Marco's able to cut out all the background noise from all the people cheering.
Exactly. He did our editor. We have the same producer that does both of our podcasts. He does a fantastic job of cutting out that entire roar that you heard in the background there that was really good. He's a magician, absolute magician.
Yes, he is.
But anyway, yeah, so App Insights, I guess I'll do it as a quick little preview of what it is and then how you can take advantage of it and then how I take advantage of it or how I use it. App Insights is, most people know about what Google Analytics is. Mm-hmm. And that's really good for analyzing the usage of your site, traffic acquisition, cohorts, how campaigns, you know, if you're using different campaigns you're doing for like Facebook ads or Google AdWords, different marketing campaigns, how that stuff works on different platforms and collecting all that kind of more marketing type stuff.
Yeah.
App Insights can do all of that as well, but what App Insights really focuses on is more or less the visibility into your application on like performance and utilization, but then you can take it to the next level and do some really slick stuff with it, which is what I'm doing. It's a poor man's like logging framework in a sense, and also doing insights. So it's pretty simple. It depends on what kind of an application you have. If it's .NET, Java, PHP, whatever. You install an SDK and it hooks into a bunch of the server-side pieces to the application. Does the same thing with containers as well. If you're all client-side, which is how I use it, if you're all client-side, then you can put a script on the page, the same way you have like that Google Urchin, the Google widget that you put on there for Google Analytics, and it will track a bunch of information on the site as things go. And if you do it just on client-side, you lose a lot of the stuff that it provides, like availability, server response time, stuff like that, stuff that you can't measure client-side.
Yeah, I've played a little bit with it because I was trying to do some IT pro style web dev at one point. And you know, putting it on that front end without going into the automation side of things that you're talking about, I found it very much like a Google Analytics type of thing. And I went, why would I bother when I've got Google Analytics plumbed up? And it seemed easier at the time. But you know, for me, when I looked at it, especially on server-side dev type of stuff, it looks really, really powerful. There's some things like New Relic that are out there that I feel like it's starting to compete with.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's better than a New Relic or if it's just that, to your point, a lot of that's baked in and you get so much at no additional cost when or low cost when you're doing it in Azure.
Yeah.
And for me, when I listen to your show, one of the things I always, Rackspace does a lot from an Azure perspective.
Right.
But the thing that's impressive to me is just the cross scale you get and all of the, you know, what you get with lower cost because you're using so much more when it comes to the insights side of it. And I've been amazed because they just recently, I believe it was the end of last month, published out some new content pack, like it's the newer model of content pack, where it's pre-canned reporting up against App Insights.
Yep.
So like the stuff that you're talking about, fascinating stuff what Microsoft's actually able to put out there and just say, hey, have you looked at this? They're basically teaser stuff and putting out there and saying, you can start logging these things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that I find it interesting because when I look at the way that they're putting out there and giving us the pre-canned reports, tells me, oh, I should have been doing this.
Yeah. I think, you know, one thing you said just a second ago about, you know, the difference between like Google Analytics, App Insights, things like, I just blanked on the one you said, New Relic. And another one, or another really good one too, I don't say they're really good just because, so they're a sponsor of the show, is Raygun. When you look at what Raygun does, when you look at what New Relic does, there's a reason why you pay for those services and why you don't pay for App Insights.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they do
I think they have a cleaner UI and easier to use UI that are made more for like teams of developers and stuff, where App Insights, you can use it that way, but there's a lot of stuff you have to set up on your own. Like, for example, one of the things that App Insights does is that it tracks exceptions that are happening, but it doesn't have a really good way of like fetching all the bad stuff that happened along with it. Like, one of the things I'll show in my session is that if you have source maps for, let's say you've written stuff in TypeScript, you've compiled it down to JavaScript, you're using it all client-side, so you have source maps that map your JavaScript over your TypeScript, and if an exception happens, it traps the exception, and it'll give you also a stack trace. But the stack trace you get when you do it with App Insights without doing any extra work is all the minified code. So it's like, oh, the error happened on line 2, column 19,000, whatever. It's like, that's not going to be easy to figure out. But what things like New Relic do, they do a much better job of being able to give you more user-friendly information. And with that being said, so I've played with both of them. New Relic, Raygun I've played with, and it's very slick and very powerful. But with that being said, you know, we're talking about App Insights.
Yeah.
So one of the things I really like about with App Insights, it does grab a lot of stuff for you. And there's cool things that you can take advantage of inside of it without any like coding or anything that you have to do. You just drop it on your application and it just runs. If you do it client side, there's a little bit of code that you're going to end up doing. You're going to drop the little script widget that they give you, which all that does is initialize the script on the page. It configures it to use the instance of App Insights that you've created. So you create an instance of App Insights in your Azure subscription, mm-hmm. and it's got a unique ID. It's called an instrumentation key.
Yep.
So you tie that with the script that you download, and then the only script that it runs, or the only call it runs, is a track page view. And they say, put that on every single page on your site. So without doing anything else, what you're going to get is page view impressions. You're going to get the automatic checking that it does for dependencies. So if like you make an AJAX request for something or something like that happens on your page, it tracks those. Or if you put it on your SharePoint site, man, you're going to get a ton of telemetry they collect on SharePoint Online. It's going to give you any exceptions that happen, but of course it misses a lot of stuff or it doesn't give you a lot of detail on what actually happened because of some cross-domain stuff that happened, some extra work you got to end up doing. That's what the kind of stuff you get out of the box. Now, where it gets cool is when I think you start taking advantage of some of the things that it adds that you can really tailor it for your applications. And this is the part you and I have kind of talked a little bit offline about this. So the way I use it is, well, we're at a SharePoint conference. So when we talk about it, I use it in that sense.
Yeah.
So what I do is I create what's called a SharePoint Framework Application Customizer. And that's going to be a little widget that I deploy to my tenant, and I can then deploy it across my entire farm. So every single site gets this. What that does is that's going to put that App Insights script on the page, and then it also puts the instrumentation key in there as well. But then I do a couple other things. I do track page view. So it's just once you add it to the page, all you have to do is call appinsights.trackPageView. And if you put no parameters in there, it's going to grab the title of the page, the URL of the page, all that stuff, and go ahead and shove that over to App Insights. But I also go in and I do, there's something called set user context or authenticated context. Mm-hmm. What you can do with that is you can actually take the username of the current person that's logged in and you can add this trace information to it. So in the future, some user calls you up and says, hey, I got some problem that happened. Like, what time did it happen? 4:00. Well, with just the standard exceptions that it tracks, I can go back and find this user's activity by searching for that username, because I've added that to every single request. And that's not done by default. You have to add that yourself.
Yeah.
And then I also go in and add additional details about like what site they're in, because you can pass in to any call you make, either with custom events, custom traces, or page views, you can add in additional data. And so I add in like the site GUID, the web GUID, the site ID, the site description. That's really it that I add in. But then it gets kind of cool. So once I've added that to this application customizer and it's been deployed across my entire farm and my entire tenant, now everybody that's using my intranet or is using a site inside my SharePoint Online tenant, all that data is being tracked. Now I can go to my developers and I can tell them, hey, whenever you build a web part or whenever you build an extension or whatever you're going to end up building, you just assume that App Insights has already been configured. So just add a reference to it in your project and now assume that the App Insights object is already present as a global object. So just like you would assume jQuery is already present on a page.
Yeah.
App Insights is already there. Don't worry about the download and the setup and the instrumentation key. That's already been done. So you go in and in your web part, you put all this other stuff in there. So you could do things like tracking an event. So when somebody clicks on a button or when someone, you know, filters a list, or like in the demo that I'll show later today or tomorrow, when someone puts some text in a filter and they see a new result set come back and then they want to be able to see just the results from that result set, or they toggle and say, show me everything. So you can see how people are using the application. And then the same way how Google Analytics uses it or gives you is you can set up a funnel and you can say, I want to see when people go to either this page or when they go, they have this event that happens. And then after that, what about this next event and this next event and this next event? So you can track to see, are people following that path that you're expecting or hoping them to follow? And if not, you can go figure out, why did they not do that?
That is really cool. I was not aware that you could actually go off and get to that level. But then again, not being the dev, I tend not to think about it that way. But I like the journey tracking that you're able to do with that. That's really fascinating. I'm just curious, is this something that's in the Voitanos array of things that you're teaching at this point?
Kinda. So I show people how to use App Insights to track events and also track and do another thing we haven't talked about, was tracing. I show them how to set that up, but then how you use it in your application is really up to you, right? The other thing that you can do with this, I just mentioned tracing, so I'll throw that out there. Two other things you can do. So one you can do is you can track traces. So a lot of times client-side stuff or stuff that's going on in the app, it's your experience working with clients. I don't know. So, for example, if you're one of my customers and you are going through and watching my videos for the course that I have, I track things of different events. Like, when did you start a video? When did you stop it? When did you pause it? When did you change the play speed from play speed of 1 to 1.25 to 1.5 to 0.75? No one ever slows it down.
I was going to say, I can't imagine slowing it down. But
but I can see when people change that kind of stuff. But then I can also see when they, because when each one of those events that I'm calling or each one of those events I'm raising, so you just say appinsights.trackEvent, and then I give it a name of an event, I can also pass an object in. And that object is just a JSON object that I can have all these other properties. So I pass in things like, what course are they watching? What chapter are they in? And what lesson are they in? What position are they in the video? Are people, I can track when people do a seek, when they go backwards or when they go forwards by a certain amount. So I can see, is there a specific video that people are going back on? So it means like there may be a problem with that video where it's either not clear or it's too complicated or I've gone too fast and I'm trying to rewatch it. You can use those kinds of things on how you can act with it. But the neat thing is too, is that with the logging, if you're logging all this stuff and you're having exceptions, you now have this central place where all that data is being collected. What App Insights does is it saves all this data for a rolling 90 days. Now, this is where the stuff that you and I've talked about.
Yeah.
So it saves all this data for a rolling 90 days. And that's what it does for free. Power BI gives you the ability to point to an App Insights instance, gives you a bunch of reports to analyze, slice and dice, all that stuff. But maybe you want to save this data for longer. Maybe you want to do more than just the 90 days. And so App Insights gives me a way to check a little box and say I want to do a continuous export. And so what it does nonstop throughout the day is it's dumping all of these individual trace events down to an Azure storage blob. And so now I'm getting a hierarchy of folders to keep things kind of organized. And I'm getting all these individual events that I can then go back and parse and see historically how things have gone. So I can go all the way back to when I first launched the course in September of 2017. And I can see, you know, what are the most popular videos? Who are the most popular customers? Or who are the customers that are the most active? What companies are the most active? I can see those kinds of things. But then you can also act on that stuff. You can also go in, though, and you can set up to where if you've done, like, custom alerts, you can say, I want to be notified when there are, like, this many exceptions that happen. And I've got one set up that I'll show this one tomorrow in my session where I use App Insights for another project. But without doing anything, I get notified via email. Woke up one day and it said, in the last 2 minutes, that was interesting. Did you hear somebody was like singing?
A little operatic interlude here in the show. It's a perfect spot for your show break. To be
there you go. Sounds like a user over there, man, instead of a developer or an IT pro. somebody in marketing. So what we do is we had someone, all of a sudden, one of my vendors changed the payload of the data they were sending me. And App Insights sent me an email and said, you've had a huge spike in errors that you normally don't see. So it uses a bunch of machine learning and stuff and artificial intelligence. So you've had a huge error rate coming in the last 5 minutes and you never see that. So I go back and look, it's like, you know, 84% of the requests we've gotten have errored out. I'm like, okay, clearly something's wrong.
Yeah.
So I go back and look at it, and within about 2 or 3 minutes, I'm able to log into the portal. I'm able to see this spike of errors coming in. You're able to filter, look at these errors, pick one, and then I'm able to see, show me all the telemetry 5 minutes before and 5 minutes after. It's just a little link that you click. Shows me all that. You start looking through it, and I can see the actual payloads of things that are coming in. Look at that. kind of take that payload out, kind of look at it for a second, and I'm like, that's not what I expect. And so within about 2 or 3 minutes, within about 5 minutes of stuff starting to hit, I was able to detect that one of my vendors changed the payload of the data they were sending us without telling us. And we were starting to lose data, but we went right back in, fixed it right away, being proactive. And a day later, they sent an email out going, hey, we want to let everybody know we changed the payloads of the data you're getting. You're getting more stuff now. I'm like, no shit. Right? We figured that out. So it's nice to be able to be proactive and see that kind of stuff. And you can set your own events up to do the same thing. I release new videos, and I want to see, you know, what kind of a spike do we see in the video usage? So I put it out there, an email goes out, and then all of a sudden you can see a corollary. Email goes out, and the next 2 or 3 hours you see an uptick in the traffic coming up on the site. Make sure everything's cool, make sure there's no errors. Works really well.
Yeah, it sounds, you know, one of the things that you and I had talked about yesterday after my session, you came over, you said, can I overlay? So if I'm watching traffic patterns like that and I'm looking at Power BI, could I overlay a series of events that I say, hey, at this time I did this, at this time I did this. And with a lot of stuff I know that you do some of the automated and some of the automation framework stuff in order to be able to do some of the marketing automation.
Yeah.
Take those as outputs of when those things happen as another input into the data and actually overlay that and be able to start to see that trend over time analysis. It's very cool that they give you 90 days at no cost, but they're, I don't know about you, 90 days isn't enough for me.
No.
From a business perspective, I want to be able to output all that information. I want to be able to see it longer term and be able to do, you know, your business isn't just going to run for 90 days.
No, hope business, not.
Your business seems to be doing well. So hopefully this is you know, that 10-year venture that you keep doing and then long into the future.
Right.
But be able to go back and truly go dial that timeline back, be able to say, I want to see what my last 3 Black Friday sales did.
Yeah.
I want to know, like, what was successful. And I did this plan then, and I did this plan then. Next year, we're going to try and do something different. Be able to even, like, try and do some predictive.
Yeah.
There's some really cool stuff that out there for that.
That was some of the stuff that when I came to your session yesterday. Power BI for me is, like, this magic tool that I hate because I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked your session yesterday because it was just, I asked you what you were doing. You're like, I've got 1 or 2 slides, and then it's just me doing stuff. I'm like, that's what I need, because everybody goes, oh, it's so easy with Power BI. I'm like, yeah, because you've freaking done it. I just want to sit over somebody's shoulder and just say, just go start doing stuff. Don't explain it to me. I just want to see you do stuff. And let me just kind of go like, hey, let me tap you on the shoulder. What is that? Can I do it like this and this and this instead? And just watch what you were doing. I got some ideas on it. And so, like, so use case, one of the things I wanted to do that I haven't been able to do was I wanted to look at the time leading up to Black Friday in 2017 at BFCM, Black Friday, Cyber Monday is what we call it. And then I wanted to look at it as well this time, because this time I tried something new and trying to bring more traffic coming in and using more ads to kind of support a lot of the traffic or to amplify some of the traffic. Ads get incredibly expensive the week of Black Friday, Cyber Monday, especially on Thanksgiving, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, right? Really expensive, like 20 times more than what you're used to paying.
Yeah.
So the trick is you try and bring all the traffic to kind of come in the weeks leading up, and then you stop going for cold traffic and you switch back and just target your warm traffic, which is the people who've been to your site. You can hit it that way. Now I wanted to see, okay, for those people that have come to the site, they clicked on the ads, then where did they actually go on the site? And so I had this dashboard on my App Insights instance. Haven't decided if I'm going to show this tomorrow or not. I might just try and fuzz the numbers out. I might show it, but I might just kill the numbers. But you can see, like, which ads are working better than others. And Facebook was giving me, you know, some good, really good analytics on what was working and what wasn't working, but it's also a little bit delayed. And so I was able to do that same thing with App Insights and see things that are just a couple minutes delayed, see which pieces are working. When an email went out on Black Friday to remind people, hey, now the sale's open. Another one went out on Cyber Monday. Hey, sale's almost going to be done. Time's almost out. You could see these spikes. You could see what was working, but it allowed me also to take some of those ads and campaigns that I was running and to shut down certain ones that were not as effective and take those funds, pump it over in the other one, and then you see things kind of amplify. So you go from spending like $50 and seeing, you know, I'm going to make up some numbers,
yes.
Okay? Say you're spending $50 across an entire campaign per day and you're getting, say, 20 sales a day out of that, okay? But when you really slice and dice it, you've got 4 different ad sets, which is an ad paired with a audience in a campaign. So, like, I'm going after people who are, you know, in North America. I'm going after people who are in the European Economic Zone, or I'm going different things like that. I can see that of those 5 that each have $10 associated with them, like 2 of them are very ineffective, but 1 of them is just hammering it home. So you can knock out, I'm going to shut down the two that I'm paying, those two that aren't really working that well. I get $20 back in my pocket. I'm just going to take 10 of that and put five on the two that are doing really good. So I'm spending $10 less, but all of a sudden I'm converting closer to 50 people instead of spending, you know, spending 50 bucks to convert 20. Now I'm spending $40 to convert 50. So you see that kind of stuff. I was able to see those funnels and watch it, which was honestly incredibly stressful because I was flying for half a Black Friday, and I was also doing a full-day workshop on Cyber Monday over in Europe, and it was like, I really want to be looking at this. I'm like, trying to talk my wife through, like, here's what you're supposed to be looking at. Here's what you're supposed to see. And when I do a break, I need you to give, just do a brain dump so I can go in and change the dials and stuff. But what gets neat about it, though, and the part that gets into App Insights or that gets into Power BI that gets neat is that one of the other things you can do with this is using Azure, you can use something called Stream Analytics.
Yes.
Or Stream Analytics or Data Factory. But if you want to see this stuff live, that's Stream Analytics.
Event Hub and Stream Analytics are fantastic technology.
Oh my God, yeah. So what I was able to do with this in a couple different instances is that I created a Stream Analytics job that has a couple different queries coming in, and I was able to point it at that big dump of all that data that's coming in, that's doing the continuous export. So it's not just the 90 days data, but it's like live, it keeps giving me more and more data as it's going. So even like, you know, right now it's streaming data. So it was going through and slicing and dicing the data, augmenting it with a bunch of other stuff, making a very flat kind of structure instead of it being so hierarchical. And I can't ever say that word right.
Hierarchical.
Yeah. But then once I do that, then I can use that data in any other way I see fit. And I can target it to go back to, like, say, an Azure table or a Power BI workbook. And I can stream live data straight to Power BI, and I can have a dashboard watching how is Black Friday going, not just from the stuff that App Insights is tracking, but I can have it tied into also pulling in data from Stripe and from PayPal, and can see the traffic coming from Google Analytics, and I can see data coming from from another App Insights instance, and all these, and that, seeing all those things being able to come in and all that telemetry all in one unified dashboard, that's where stuff gets really cool.
So for a tiny bit of clarification, because you're mostly right, Beer, there was a little bit of off there. So
okay, yeah.
Stream Analytics takes a look at the data as it's going by, right? That's all it's able to do. It's, you know, imagine sitting on the bank of a river with a monitor that you're sticking in the water as it's going by, it's watching the flow.
Right.
And once it gets past a certain point, you no longer have access to that piece of data anymore. So what you're doing, though, is because you're taking that as the dump out of, you know, App Insights, it's going into this flat file structure, you still have that residual.
Yep.
Or you can always go back and take a look at it. But what's built into that Power BI model is actually only what's there in the cache.
Yep.
Once it flushes out of the cache, it's no longer there anymore. So it's one of those things where it's a catch-22. Like, you want to watch that live stream stuff because it's instantaneous, and it's the instant feedback, the instant gratification moment of you were able to watch that. But you also need to go off and build the same type of thing on the backside, taking a look at the other data, so you can do the trend over time analysis, because they're very different models of how you view the data. One is, this may be why you're more successful this year, is because Meredith isn't as much of a tinkerer as you are. You know, if Black Friday was successful as it should be, because, you know, we watch those streams, they're like, ooh, I should buy, sell, as you're watching that stream, it's like, things are up, and then they're... Whereas we look at it more in the reporting structure as opposed to real-time analytics, going back and taking a look at it and saying, well, I made a plan, I sort of stuck to my plan, now what happened? And then I can start to forecast for the future. App Insights, you know, going out and watching that as a stream can be fantastic, but it's a jumpy thing.
Oh, it is, and you're right. I mean, it's two different use cases, right? Because you'd have a work, if you're trying to monitor something that's going on, a live, like IoT or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
If you were doing that, then it would be easier to. That's where Stream Analytics comes into play. If you're using it for more like analysis of like big picture kind of stuff, that wasn't helping me that much there. And so now that's instead, I have a separate process that's using Data Factory to take the data that is being dumped in the Azure blob, do a bunch of aggregation to it as well, putting into different storage vehicles, and then having a Power BI work, well, ultimately model. Getting a Power BI workbook
model.
To go do it.
Model,
Power BI thank
model.
You. Okay. Power BI model to go through. This is why I need you on the show.
Hey, you know, it's...
But taking a Power BI model and going through and then being able to slice and dice it, make it easier kind of self-service stuff, because right now it's all like building reports on my own, which I don't want to do building reports on my own. I'd rather be using a tool that is better at doing it.
Yeah.
So that's the stuff that seeing you do yesterday is like, that's what I want to be able to do. I want to hook my stuff up into this a whole lot easier.
Very cool.
So yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's cool because with App Insights, you can do so much stuff with it as a developer, you can go crazy with it, but you can just add in, like just the out-of-the-box stuff that you get mm-hmm. is on the portal is already incredibly powerful. Being able to just see what's going on. If you see an exception that comes in, you can go pick the exception and say, show me what happened just for this user or just in this session, a couple minutes here and there. See the details of the stuff that's going on. It's really like having a, you know, if there's a murder that happens, it's somebody who stood there with a camera, took a picture of it and just said, here's what happened. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, oh, cool, there's no murder mystery. It's like the story's right there. And you just want to make sure that you're collecting the data the right way. Like, that's what my sessions are going to be over later today. Well, the very end of the session today is going to touch on it. The one tomorrow is going to spend more time on it and showing how I collect all that information, both on my site and how I collect it in SharePoint Online. The trick when you're doing this, though, and this is the part that I always have trouble with. So I'm a data like pack rat. Mm-hmm. You got to remember GDPR. And so, like, the stuff that I showed last week when I was in Europe, I'm like, here's how I use App Insights. They're going, yeah, you can't do that. And I'm like, I know I can't do that here. You got to figure it out, but don't track their email. Yeah. Do a one-way hash, and you're okay with it. And then they're not tracking their email. This always comes across being a little crass or a little cavalier, but I mean it when I say this. I don't care about any individual that's coming to the site. I care about trends. I care about, did person A come to the site, look at a couple things, and then leave and not buy anything? If they did, well, or if there's a high percentage of them that do, if there's a certain percentage you're looking for there, and if it's lower than I'm expecting, then that's not good.
Yeah.
But if they come in and they buy, or a certain percentage are buying, and the path they tracked, and they went through this weird path way off to the side, and then they kind of came back and bought, I'm like, you need to make that simpler. You need to make that more optimized.
Yeah. So for me, to your point, I don't care about one data point. Mm-hmm. One data point doesn't help me. I want millions of data points to be able to actually trend. So the personalization, it doesn't do anymore. In fact, it's worse for me in most cases, because that means that it's extra data that I don't need in a model that's just clogging things up. Mm-hmm. So when I start to look at things, it's like, how do I scrub all of that? Well, before it ever comes in, like that's where the Power Query side of things comes in, that ETL side. Like, let's shed that. I don't need that piece of data. Maybe if they've opted in, you can be using that for other things. I don't care about that piece of data for the things that I tend to go off and track. I want to go off and I want to understand those trends, how is it being used, what are people doing with it? Less about a human, more about the mass of humanity.
Yeah, yeah.
Type of stuff. So.
Part of this too, this is where I've wanted to sit down with you and John. The three of us have talked about this a couple different times. Yeah. It's how much stuff should I be trying to aggregate? I have all of the transactions, but how much stuff should I be trying to, transactions not being things they purchase, but the individual events that happen. Mm-hmm. How much should I be trying to aggregate on my own into an aggregation store? Versus how much should I just say, screw it, let Power Query go through and do this stuff for me, and I'll spend the time over there. And it's like, I don't know. It's kind of apples to apples. If you want it over here, you can. You can do it over here instead. Maybe there's some things you can't do over here that you can do better over here. Some things are better than others.
It's the standard consultant answer. It depends. It depends upon what your goals are most of the time. And you know, when we start to take a look at it, the more data you have, the better off you are, because it's easier to shed data than it is, you know, not to have enough.
That's right? Yeah.
So
that's why I'm a pack rat. I don't want to lose it.
Yes. You and I started talking about BI way back. I don't know if you remember when we first talked about business intelligence. It was the very first time we were in Boston. We were on the tee, right?
Okay.
And we started talking about fantasy football.
Oh, well, that's different. Yeah.
Very, very, very long. Like, and you were talking about how you've collected all this NFL data over years and things like that, and that type of stuff. It's like the more aggregated data you have, there's one of the models I play with Google this year for the NCAA tournament.
Oh,
did
yeah.
This whole thing with the big data. I have that in the PBIX format. I have one Power BI model. I can't instantiate it on my Mac. I found out this just didn't want to load because I'm using Parallels. It just didn't have enough memory to it.
Yeah.
But I can play with that data, and that is fascinating because you have every piece of data. When you take a look at something like that, they track every stat of everything. To be able to slice and dice and take a look at something like, I want to know every NCAA team that had a point guard that was shorter than 5'6", who had the mascot of Beaver, how many times did they win in the NCAA tournament? Like, how useful in the most of the time.
Did you figure it out? Because we can go to Vegas and we can make a bet on that next year.
We certainly can. Yeah, no, that's where we're going with this. But
this is the thing where it gets really cool here. And we'll wrap this up in a second. But I think that this part gets really neat is where I didn't have things modeled the right way. I still don't. I'm still working on it. It's one of those things. It's like, it's not a revenue generating thing. And as a company of two, where I think that I own the company. I don't. I work for my wife. But it's not something you're going to focus and put the attention into. I know it would be nice to have, but it's not going to add another sale. I mean, mm-hmm. Yes, it will eventually. If I do the right things and understand the data, I can make certain decisions based on what I can see, then things can be better for the business. But one of the things that I did was I took all that raw data and I took a Power BI and I pointed at the raw data, and it churned for about 3 hours trying to pull in about 600 gigs or something like that. It was a ton of just raw data that's there. Hits the aggregation question.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, well, let me just see what I can do with this. And so I took a map, and this is back before App Insights started removing the IPs from requests. They used to do that, but they don't do that anymore for GDPR.
Yeah.
And I just took a map, and then I just took that one data point and dropped it in. And I'm like, well, where are my customers coming from? And like about 3 or 4 seconds later, it just shows me on a map, like going, here you go. I'm like, make the bubbles the size of like the count of where my customers are coming from. I'm like, holy crap, I'm huge in Tunisia. Not huge, but I was like, you know, I'm like, I didn't realize I had customers in Tunisia. That's awesome. Because when they buy something from me, I ask them for their name, their email address, and their credit card. And the rest of it, I don't really care about. I don't care where you are. I don't really care what your name is. I just email so I can get in touch with you, and credit card, so, I mean, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
So I can put food on the table. But I mean, it's stuff that it's just, the PII I don't care about. I don't want to find people, but it's like, where is that coming from? That stuff's cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And one of the things I was showing yesterday was, by default, it tries to lay things out on a map when Power BI it knows certain things.
Yeah.
Right? And when I use a two-character column that has just rows and rows of two-character column that happen to look like states, it's going to try and lay it out as on a map.
Yeah.
So it was mapping everything for me. Like, super smart stuff Microsoft is doing, that machine learning side of things. It's starting to be baked into everything.
Yeah.
And it's really fascinating. Just in desktop, snap two.
Yeah.
Very, very quickly. It's good stuff. So the more data you have, the better off you are. It's a matter of whittling it down and being able to figure out finding the information in the storm of data. Like, how is it informative for you? It's great that you have everything, but to your point, it's like, is it going to make you one more sale? Maybe not, but it can help you identify where you don't need to be spending.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So you can make, you know, it's decision support.
It is.
At the end of the day, that was what BI was at the very beginning, right?
The more insight that you have into what's going into your business, the better decisions you can make. I mean, it just boils down to that. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. Hey, man, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I got a session in 25 minutes, so we got to pack up and I got to go get set up.
Yeah, there you go, bud. It's a lot of fun. Thanks for, I think we said we were going to cross-post this. So it's going to be awesome for my audience as well. Just a quick reminder, how do people find you?
Oh, find me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because it's going to be on your show.
Yeah, man.
So me personally, Andrew Connell, same thing on Twitter, at Andrew Connell, same thing on my website, at andrewconnell.com, or not, andrewconnell.com. And the business I kept referring to in here is Voitano. Spelled just like Brian Boitanos, like, mm-hmm. you know the South Park thing, you know, what would Brian Boitanos do? So, or the skater, maybe. I think he's more famous with South Park. But Voitanos.io, and it's video training, on-demand video training for SharePoint framework development.
And I can say from personal experience, being a non-dev, I've taken parts of your course, and it's really, really good stuff, way over my head, but definitely if you're a SharePoint dev, it's worth going off and checking out.
Awesome. Thanks, Jason.
My pleasure, bud.
AC's Voitanos delivers on-demand, video-based training for developers on the latest SharePoint extensibility model from Microsoft in his course, Mastering the SharePoint Framework.
CJ's Hyperfish automates the collection of user profile information from users and organizational directories such as Office 365, SharePoint, Active Directory, and HR systems. The secure service supports on-premises, hybrid, and online environments. Bring your directory to life at hyperfish.com.
All right, CJ, it's that time. This is what, maybe one of the last few episodes of the year, might be the last episode of the year, depending on how our weeks go with Christmas next week.
True.
We got some fun stuff, though. I've got a pair of picks, you've got a pair of picks, and we've also got two listener picks that were also sent in as well that we want to share here too. So how about you go with one of your picks first?
Okay. So actually both of my picks, strangely enough, the source of these picks were the same person, Matt Bremer. Great minds think alike. And He's posted about these on Facebook where I found them and thought, man, these are really cool. The first one is McLaren launches the Senna Edition P1 car. So there's some person who's bought a McLaren P1 GTR and it's custom. So McLaren Special Operations will do basically anything you want, like for however much money you have. And they've done a custom version of a McLaren P1 GTR, but with Senna's colors and a few mods. And if you're into cars, this thing is dead sexy. Like, it's done like Senna's old F1 cars, right? The same livery, the red and white. And it just looks incredible. And it's actually not a McLaren Senna, the Senna that they put out. It's a P1, but it's done in Senna's colors and it just looks stunning. And so if you're into McLarens or into F1 or what have you, this thing's pretty sweet.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I saw this. This is really neat.
Apparently it took 2 years or something, or 3 years to make. Good and God. The paintwork itself took over 800 hours.
Holy moly.
I don't know why, or if they're just really slow. Oh, sorry. Yeah. It was completed over a period of 3 years for an undisclosed fee. So maybe it was gorgeous. Done in sections, or maybe it didn't take 3 contiguous years. But anyway, a lot of work went into this thing. And yeah, it's pretty nice. Comes with a bespoke helmet and Senna's colors and stuff as well. Pretty sweet. I'm a bit really of a Senna cool. fan. And yeah, I visited his grave in Sao Paulo when I was there, just to do a bit of a recce and do a bit of a visit. Never saw him race in person. Arguably the world's greatest racing driver. And cool to see things like this go on.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's cool. Good pick.
Yeah.
My first pick is, I know it's going to be a shocker. Both of mine are going to be spacey related. So the first one is something I saw on Wired this past week. Did you know that the SpaceX delivery capsule Dragon may be contaminating ISS?
No.
This is really interesting, and it's not contaminating it the way you think it is. So when you read the article or you see the title, it's like, oh, so when they open it up, it's contaminating the inside of ISS and endangering the astronauts. No, it's actually potentially damaging the space station itself. Now, they don't know if this is the case, but and it may be all coincidence, but some weird stuff's going on. The article is quite long. CJ, you definitely want to read this because you like this stuff too. But effectively, there are these sensors that they use to monitor the ozone for the Earth. And they are able to tell that when certain things change, they can tell like that these sensors, like different things change. When a Dragon capsule arrives at ISS, these sensors kind of go haywire. And they stay haywire. Like they get like a film on them.
Huh.
Right. And it's the stuff that it degrades the sensor. And it's not just doing those sensors, but it's doing other ones as well. And what the theory is, and they do all the stuff that they're supposed to do that NASA says they have to do. And they're working with NASA to try and figure out, is it us? Are we doing something that the Russians aren't doing, or that the ULA is not doing, and we're doing something that's messing up, or vice versa? And effectively what it is, they think that potentially the paint that's on the outside of Dragon is outgassing, and it's those molecules have nowhere to go, but it's going on to it's going to ISS. Outgassing is like, you know, when you buy a new car and you get in the car and it smells like it's got that new car smell. It's outgassing is all those chemicals that are in the car are being released from the carpet, the leather, the
materials,
all the materials. And over time, all that stuff will release that is going to eventually release. Huh. And the car will just get just be a normal smell to it or have no smell.
Interesting.
And yeah. That's what's going on with Dragon. So they're looking into it to figure out what's going on here, but it's
wow.
Seems that to be interesting. Sensors.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Should we do a listener pick or should I do my next one?
Why don't you do your next one and then I'll do mine. And then I'll take one listener and you do one listener.
Okay. I'll be real quick. There's a group of people who have built a Lego Star Wars Death Star trench, but the thing is humongous. Like it's like 5 feet tall. It's massive. So, you know, the Death Star trench where the X-Wings go flying through it, chased by TIE fighters, all that sort of stuff. These guys have built that scene out of Lego, and it is incredibly intricate. And not only that, but if they flip it around, there's this whole inside of the Death Star on the other side of the wall, and it's got all these funny scenes inside the Death Star, like the tracked beam controls, Donald Duck conducting a class inside the Death Star, some stormtroopers getting it on in a back side passage, R2-D2 and C-3PO up to no good, having some fun with some chicken drumsticks and some booze. Just all sorts of funny scenes in the Death Star. But this thing is humongous. You should see it. Like, when you see it by a person, it's sort of from the ground up, it comes up to this guy's mid-chest, I suppose.
This is incredible. This is amazing.
Yeah, incredible amount of detail has gone into this thing. It's so intricate. If you're into Lego, it's pretty sweet.
That's pretty cool. That's a good pick, man.
Yeah, I not that. Project. Thanks, Matt Bremer.
So my last pick is a couple weeks ago, you and I talked about this guy called, or BPS, which this guy had built, is building a Falcon Heavy rocket, and he's doing it as a model rocket. And so he's trying to, go through all, he really uses it to sell a lot of the parts that he has for building model rockets and controlling them and all that stuff. But it's not just so much of building a rocket. It's like all the details around it, like flight control stuff and, hooking them up to doing different sensors and like microcontrollers and stuff. It's really neat. Well, I found he's got a YouTube channel, and I found episode 3 of his YouTube channel, which is I think it's about 17 or 18 minutes. It's titled Flight Computer Outline, Landing Model Rockets. And this is all about how he is building the computer for the Falcon Heavy and all the different pieces that he's got within all the decisions he made. So he explains all the stuff that you have to go through, the challenges you have, what the different parts he's trying to choose, how he needs to be able to turn things on and off. Usually you would use a relay to do that, but he's like, you can't do that with a rocket because it's a lot of vibration. These things can take a bang on it, and the relays are mechanical things, and it's freaking fascinating. It just gets really deep. And it's one of those things you're watching the video. And you know how when you start, like, you get sucked into something and you just kind of like lean more and more into it. Next thing you know, you've got this horrible posture and your neck is killing you.
Yep. Because you're super deep in it, you've forgotten whether you're sitting right. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. And you've got a drooling mess all over you. And
Yep. That's cool. I like it.
Yeah. That was a good one.
Hey, we've got some listener picks this week.
We do. These are fun.
You want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. The first listener pick is actually submitted from my wife.
Is she really a listener? Does she listen to our show?
She listens to the first couple seconds because she's also the one that makes sure that everything gets published. Yes. She makes sure it works. So, you know the movie Hidden Figures?
Oh, yeah.
So this is not the same. I don't think this is the same person, but the title of this article is A Hidden Figure, a mathematician who helped develop GPS technology, was inducted into the Air Force Hall of Fame. Her work, Gladys West's work at a U.S. Navy base in Virginia back in the 50s and 60s, played a pivotal role in creating the popular form of technology that is now incorporated into cell phone, cars, and social media.
Amazing. I think we had a pick, one of my picks, I can't remember. Yeah, we were talking about the law that got passed with Katherine Johnson, had a building named after her. Along a similar vein, this is awesome. I think I commented on her post about this on Facebook and said something along the lines of, it's great to see these women finally acknowledged for the contributions they've made to incredible things, like putting people into space. And like GPS technology has arguably changed the world significantly, right? Like not even arguably, has changed the world significantly. And it's just cool to see these acknowledgements, especially at this level as well, right? Like it's one of the highest sort of honors the Air Force bestows upon folks, and pretty sweet.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so what you got for us? What's our other listener pick?
Yeah, okay, so this one is from longtime listener, not quite first-time caller, Rob Windsor, who this has been making the rounds by a guy, Mark Rober, who I believe actually was an ex-NASA guy, something like that anyway, engineer. Mm-hmm, yeah. Anyway, it's called Package Thief versus Glitter Bomb Trap. And he basically just engineers his way into this awesome trap for package thieves, where he built a package that, I won't steal all the thunder, but is a glitter bomb and records it And there's a few other secrets, sort of, not secret. There's a few other surprises for these thieves along the way.
Yeah.
And it's just awesome because he basically gets them on camera, stealing the packages and bombing their cars with glitter and houses and all this sort of stuff. And it's pretty funny. It's like, I just despise package thieves. I just think it's just so low.
Yeah.
And it's great to see somebody get a little bit back on them. This video has gone crazy. It's got 42 million views.
It's only been out since, from just this week.
Yeah, December 17th. So it's been out a few days when we recorded this, and it's already up to 42 million views. I think that really goes to show the support for for messing with package thieves that there is.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so it's just hilarious that the amount of swear words that you have to get bleeped out is quite hilarious. And get them. That's good. So thanks, Rob, for sending that one in.
Absolutely. Awesome, CJ. Well, that's another wrap for our show.
Yeah.
Christmas week this week. So Merry Christmas to you and your family and to all of our listeners, and happy holidays to everybody who's not celebrating Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. And likewise. Have a great break.
I will do that, and you do the same.
I'll try. Don't eat too much.
Yeah, right.
Drink a lot, though. That's okay.
Yeah, definitely. All right, dude.
All right. Have a good time. See ya.
You too, bud. Bye.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.